Here we are again. It is the What's Up Cuz podcast. I'm Dr. David Brock, and it is my esteemed honor to always be in studio with the one and only, the gorgeous Dr. Sharon McDaniel. What's up, cuz?
What's up, cuz?
How's things in your world?
Oh, well, you know, we been real busy over here.
Yeah, with your 82 jobs.
Ooh, just 82. I'm trying to pare them down a bit. So.
Yeah, we were teasing the other day that you were going to lose your Jamaican status if you lose one more job, but you got 82, so I think you're still good right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's great to see you today. And how you doing?
I am well. You know, I really am well. I'm thankful for another day. Any day above ground is a good day.
It's a good day.
You know, and I tell people I've learned to have good days and better days. So the worst I can have is a good day. So it's been a good day today. It's been a good week. I'm grateful. It's hard to believe that we're already this far into the year. It seems like the year is speeding past us. And I'm telling you, every day is something new.
Something new. Well, you know, I'm so glad you got the fireplace going around here because, you know, it was almost close to 60 the other day. Now it's snowing today, so
right.
You know, the weather's a little bit schizophrenic, so I was like, okay, well, I'm so glad the heat is going on, and but you're looking very well, so life has been doing well for you.
I have no complaints. Mm-hmm. I really don't, and yeah, I was saying, I told somebody the other day, Pittsburgh is the only place you can get all four seasons in about an hour. You will get summer, spring,
least.
Winter, all in an hour, so we got to keep our coats in the car, flip-flops in the car, sunglasses. You never know what's going to happen
never
here.
Know.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we got to stay ready so we don't have to get ready.
That's exactly right. Well, I'm so glad that you were ready today. And I actually had a little warm, you know, so I didn't tell you, but this season I purchased a lot of coats. You know, I'm not a coat person, but I think maybe the older you get, you realize, oh, I might need something over my shoulders or two, right?
Right,
you know, so
right.
I indulged in a few coats or two.
Well, listen, I've been watching, and those of you that don't know, if you haven't heard, Doc has Fashion Fusion Magazine, one of her other 97 jobs that she does, and she is in the influencing area now, and as a result, she has her Substack that you can subscribe to, and also InStyle PhD, which is her magazine, where she promotes fashion. And I call it fashion on a budget because everything is not always outlandish, very expensive. One time she had on an outfit, and I was like, Doc, you're killing that, or whatever. She's like, thank you, complimenting my Walmart shoes. I was like, what? So she could teach you how to dress from Walmart all the way to whoever the fashion gurus are. But nonetheless, yeah, I've seen some of the pictures, all the pictures, because I'm on your stuff. I usually comment or whatever, but the pictures have been fire of all the different coats. I have no clue in the world where they're stored, where you could possibly put them, but she's the only person that has to buy a house for her clothes.
Oh, no, maybe not. I'm purging. I'm in the process of purging.
Okay.
It's been a year, but I'm still purging.
Well, listen, those of you that, if you want to get on the purging list, trust me, you want to be on her good side. When she purges, it is very, very, I wish I could wear some. Y'all might see me in a coat and be like, Doc, that looks feminine. I'm out. Don't worry about it. I'm rocking this coat, okay? So if you see me with a leather cheetah print coat, just know that it was one of the purge items, and I grabbed it, and I'm wearing it as a result.
Well, you know, nowadays, it's like they're making things that are unisex, so you really can't tell. I mean, so everybody's wearing whatever. And so,
for sure.
Which I think is pretty fun because, you know, it's just like it's gender neutral. So.
For sure, because my wife just went out the door wearing one of my sweaters. I didn't realize she has on my sweater.
She said, okay, all right, then. Did you ask for permission?
Not at all. You know what I'm saying? She just put it on and rolled on out the door like it was okay. But, you know, that's the things that happen. But here we are again in studio, and we're grateful to be here. And I know that we have another wonderful, exciting topic that we're going to talk about. Here on the What's Up Cuz podcast, we try to deliver relevant information in bite-sized pieces that you can get and apply to your life. We are not trying to bring anything that you need a thesaurus and a dictionary to understand what we're saying. We sometimes mess up a word and we laugh about it. We're not so hung up on ourselves, but we're grateful for another opportunity to be in studio. And I know we have some guests that will be joining us. So Doc, why don't you just break us and tell us what is our topic today that we're going to be talking about, and then we'll bring our guest on.
Absolutely. So we're going to be talking today about understanding the dynamics of African-American male-female relationships in 2025 and beyond. And, you know, we talked about this last year in 2024, and then we actually started the podcast to really talk about how do we center relationships, because we know in the African-American community, we've been hearing such strife between male and female relationships, right, or other types of relationships. And so we wanted to make sure that we had this conversation early in our broadcast year, if you will. And so we have some tremendous guests, married folks, single folks, people who like being single, people who might want to be married, who knows, but we want to be able to have these conversations about what's going on in our communities, because we really think it's really important.
Right, right. Yeah, it really is. And as we were preparing for this topic, I found myself thinking about myself and even asking myself a question. I was like, how transparent do I really want to be?
Well, okay. I might kick you over there, like, okay, sir, they don't need to hear all that. They don't need to hear all of that.
You know, sometimes I'll be saying stuff, and Sharon always tells me, y'all, I call her, you might hear me call her Doc, you might hear me call her Sharon, you might hear me call her Cuz, you might hear me call her D-Square, because I call her all of those things, yes, in affectionate terms. But sometimes she always reminds me, she says, okay, make sure you just let people know that's where you were, that's mm-hmm. not who you are anymore.
Amen.
So I may, you know, share, you know, even in this time together, I may share some personal things, and I'm not opposed to sharing some personal things if it's going to help somebody,
yes,
along the way.
Absolutely.
So you will hear, because we're very transparent in what we do here on the What's Up Cuz podcast. So with that being said, you know, we have a lot to jump into. So Doc, why don't you introduce our guests, and we're going to ask them to just kind of say hello and then say something about themselves, and then we'll get into our discussion.
Absolutely. Well, we have joining us today, we have Dr. Evan Destin, we have Shelley Allen, and we have Ivory Bennett, and they're going to be joining us today. So why don't we say hello, and I'd like you all to introduce yourselves more appropriately in terms of your background, why this subject is important to you as well. So why don't we start with you, Dr. Destin?
Yes, and as we like to say here, what's up, cuz?
What's up, cuz?
Hey, what's up? You know, what a wonderful intro. I just feel so warm. I love the conversational style to this podcast every time I'm on. Yeah, my name is Dr. Evan Destin. I'm an educator. I'm also an independent researcher. And as Dr. McDaniel, I'm a board member on The Second Chance. And this is a real interesting topic to me, particularly, you know, I did go to Morehouse, an all-men's college next door to an all-women's college. And just the dynamics of, you know, men and women, black men and women's relationships is something that I've experienced early on because of that in the college days. And I myself am a married person with kids, and I'd love to contribute.
Thank you, Dr. D.
Welcome, sir.
Chalet?
Hey, what's up, everyone?
What's up?
Thank you again for inviting me. I would say that my background, I have about, I say, close to 15 years experience in the, you know, the social work world, sharing that experience with, of course, Dr. Sharon McDaniel and Dr. David Brock. Within that experience, I actually decided that I needed to transition into the field of mental health. Mental mm-hmm. health is real, mm-hmm. And the experiences within child welfare, along with my own trauma, it was definitely a necessary switch, and I felt like I would better be able to not only understand myself, but understand the work that I desired to do and the impact on that work if I understood the challenges experienced through mental health. So therefore, earning a master's degree in student affairs so that I can enter into the world of higher education. I also earned a master's degree in professional counseling, and now I'm currently working on my licensure hours to gain my LPC. So I am definitely excited about being a part of this conversation, especially bringing the mental health piece in, and really being able to engage in what all of those things look like specifically, because I am a single unmarried Black female. And so I feel like that is an important dynamic within this discussion.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We welcome you here today.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to having how you infuse the mental health piece to it, because I think it is really important. Thank you, Shelley. Mm-hmm. Ivory.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm honored. My name is Ivory Bennett. I am 34 years old. I personally spent 17 years in foster care. Professionally, I've been advocating since I was a teenager, so we're going on almost two decades now. I have a background in education. I was an English teacher for several years, a cheer coach for several years. Right now, I don't know what I'm going to be when I grow up, y'all, but it'll be something. And I have like 800 jobs, too. It's really unfortunate. I'm just a box of chocolate sometimes. You never know what you're going to get. But I am an advocate. I'm a writer. I'm a public speaker. I believe in the power of education and in the power of advocacy. And so I'm just honored to talk about this subject today, because I have a really big passion for mental and emotional health and well-being. And I believe that for Black people specifically, our relationships, whether it be romantic, platonic, familial, are incredibly important to our health and well-being. And so I think this conversation is going to touch on that.
Great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I know we sent you all some information, some background information. And I, as Dr. Brock and I were talking before we started the podcast, we're really talking about some of the stats in our communities, and when we both found out that only 31% of African American folks are married in this country, and I say this country because I'll set the context. I know when I was in Europe a couple years ago, and I saw I was speaking at the University of Barcelona, and so I saw a young gentleman with his young children. And I said, is your wife coming? He's like, wife? He said, that's that Western stuff that you all do. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, that's what you all do. But we have arrangements or agreements here, in other parts of the world. So I don't know, but I think we can talk about that a bit more. But in the United States, 31% of African American folks are married, compared to 48% of all Americans. And so that was something that really struck me. And then the other stat was that 50% of all African American women have never been married. And so that was also a statistical point that I thought I would highlight. Doc, what about you? Were there other, Dr. Brock, were there other statistical information that you thought was relevant, and how did it shock you or not?
Well, no, when I was reading, as we said earlier, you know, the statistics in themselves, I was thinking back in the day I remember I was a younger man, and about 12. So that's a long time ago, y'all. I was about 12. And I remember being at my uncle and my aunt's 60th wedding anniversary. And I thought to myself, oh my God.
They've been around a long time.
Right. That's like 60 years. I'm like, oh my God. Like, who lives that long? You know, just let alone be married that long, you know. But then I thought, you know, back in the day, it seems like that's what our people did. They got married.
Right.
And they stayed married for whatever the reason, whatever the glue was, whatever the reasons were, but they were married. But now when I read this statistic, it was interesting because even when you said, you know, 50% of African American women haven't been married, my mind went to some people in my circle that I know have never been married and seem as if they don't even want to be married. Mm-hmm. Like it's too much, you know, like that's something from the past, something old, something that we don't do anymore. So that's interesting. You know, I would be interested to hear even some of our panel, what you guys think about that statistic of never being married and then only 31% being married. So that leaves a large percentage of individuals that have never crossed the threshold and or either crossed and no longer are across that threshold. So when you hear that statistic, what comes to your mind? Anybody want to jump in? I don't want to put you on the bus, but anybody want to just jump in?
Yeah, I'll jump in. Thank you for that. Yeah, you know, when I think of the statistic, It seems consistent with the way I think, like, religion across the U.S., at least in America, is kind of weakened, like the black church. Mm-hmm. And whenever I think about marriage, I do think about the bonds being fostered by some religion. And I think there, one can argue there's a correlation with that, right? You know, that says that if there's not strong bonds there, then there may not be strong bonds that what's holding people together. So for me, it seems consistent, you know, this anecdote of me saying that. But it also reminds me of my own sort of like social circles. So I remember I had a best friend out of high school. I remember being so surprised that out of high school, he was getting married. I was like, man, that's what they do in the 50s. Like, he was coming out of high school. I was like, man, you know, and but you know, when I was in college, I had a fiance while I was in college, and it was in my, you know, mid 20s. My friends were saying I was going too fast. And to this day, the three of them are not married.
Interesting.
And they're getting close to their 50s, and there's always they leave that possibility open, but I'm not too sure. They are certainly dating, but they're not committing, and it makes you wonder. I mean, some of the reasons they do share is that you know, work is more important. And there always will be, this is men, you know, saying that it will always be options, you know, treating relationships like options. Mm. And it'll be one day, you know, it'll happen. But I'm always wondering, like, when will it happen? I mean, you're pushing 50 now, you know, if that is what you'd like, mm-hmm. you know, to do. But that's what it makes me think of.
That's very interesting, for sure. So the whole notion of options that men believe that they have. What about you, Ivory? Any reaction to the statistics in terms of 50% of women black women never being married?
I have so many reactions. The first is going to play off of Dr. Destin. So this idea of, like, options, right? And I've been ideating for the last several years within my friend groups about how I think in our society, Western society, women devalue as they age and men increase in value as they age. And so I think a part of that is what's at play with that. And specifically in the city of Pittsburgh, I feel like there's a lot of amazing women here. And I guess we're talking about heterosexual relationships.
Yes.
Specifically. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of awesome women who are very much wife material, but I wouldn't say the same about their male counterparts per se. I know that's going to be radical. I know it's going to be radical.
Yeah, you provoked the reaction out of me and Dr. Dustin. We both clutched our pearls, okay?
Listen, these 34-year-old black men in Pittsburgh are not bringing to the table the same things that I'm bringing to the table. If you just want to look at it from a logical standpoint, if you want to look at it from an emotional standpoint, their emotional intelligence needs to be cultivated. If you want to look at it from just like, are you ready and healed and in a healthy place to be partnering with someone? A lot of them also aren't. And I'm not here to like judge as to how they've gotten to those places, because I understand this city is a really difficult city to live in. As a black woman in particular, when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, my first alma mater, undergrad, I remember Professor Taylor telling us about the health of black women in Pittsburgh is comparable to women in third world countries. Yes. And I know there's a new terminology for third world countries, so forgive me. But it's a really difficult place for black women in particular to survive and thrive. And they still show up. They still get master's degrees and doctorates. They're still holding down entire families and lineages. And I have not seen or experienced that from their peers who are males. I'm not here to hate on men. I'm just here to share my experiences. The other thing that I thought about when we're talking about why are not black people not married at the same rate, or black women in particular, there is a history in the United States of discouraging black people from being married. That's mm-hmm. why we have the whole jumping of the broom phenomenon. Yeah, sure. There was a lot of discouragement, whether it be through social initiatives, like you can't have a man in the house and get benefits from the government. And we know that there were certain times when if you didn't have benefits from the government, you were not going to make it. You were not going to be able to give your family what you needed. And so we have to be really careful and look at the history and see, how did we get here? What things contributed to people discarding marriage as a sacred bond? What even is marriage as an institution in the past? And what does it mean today, right? What's the motivation beyond love? Because this is not talking about people who are in love. We don't know the percentage of that. We don't know the people who are living together and who are unmarried, right? I mean, unless y'all have the data points for that and look that far. But this doesn't discount that Black love is still happening and Black partnerships are still happening. So I think we just need to be mindful and know our history and understand how our history affects things.
You know, I think that that's absolutely right. And you just raised some really good points. And I always talk about in the current context how, you know, our history in this country, how that really has given us information about how we show up in spaces and the things that we, you know, Dr. Jordi Grew talks about the epigenetics of many things, right? And so how that really centers itself in the way in which we, our communities work, our families work. And so I think, Ivory, you raise a really critical point about our history and the messages and that discouragement of getting married, or in most cases, prohibited from being married, right? It's just like, okay, continue to breed children, you know, for the purpose of the economics of it all, but not to, and I'm talking about during slavery, but not, let's not talk about having a marriage or a relationship that was deemed legal, if you will. So there is some messaging that happened early in our history. So I think the context of history is so critically important. And to your point, and that's why I talked about this whole notion of Western culture in terms of what we look and deem as relationships, because as I gave you that example when I was in Spain, the young man said, well, no, that's what you all do over here, but we love each other, but we're just not, we don't need that piece of paper to say that we are a union, if you will. And so, Shelley, what are your thoughts about the some of the data that you've heard and some of the comments, too?
Wow, is what's coming to mind right now, listening to you all provide your initial reactions, and then combining my own initial reaction, just reading. My thought, I felt heavy, like, oh, that was my immediate thought. Mm-hmm. And the space I went into was immediately thinking about the presentation within my immediate family and within, you know, my social and familial context. Immediately I thought of who were those people that either were married when I was young and growing up and remained married. Mm. And immediately my thought was, I had enough representation of marriages that led me to still feel like Black marriages are important. Mm-hmm. The feeling that it gave me was, I do desire to be a part of, you know, that, to increase that 31%. Yet the reasons why I have not gotten there, Dr. Ivory touched on. Mm-hmm. You know, and so my mind was all over the place.
That's good. Well, you know, Ivory, you got a PhD now, because Shalita gave you a doctorate degree.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so she is manifesting your future. And right.
Listen,
there. So.
How about that? Yours and mine. How about it?
Absolutely.
I'll take it. Listen, okay, we could be on doctor. We don't have a problem with that.
That's exactly right. But that's really profound in terms of what you see, right? You know, what are the relationships that you see as you grow through life? And so that also, Shelley, as you were indicating, really sets the context of how people move through their adulthood based on what they've seen. So you saw healthy relationships and marital relationships. And so you're desirous of that. And I know there's some folks that I've talked to over the years that they didn't see those marital relationships. They saw perhaps, you know, living together in love unions, but not necessarily that marriage. And I think Ivory talked about what's going on, you know, in different regions. And so there's, you know, I was joking one time because they said, oh, if you want to find all the men, they're in Alaska.
Oh, are they?
They're working on the pipeline in Alaska. Okay. So, you know, so they have like this whole lot. They used to have this calendar of the guys from Alaska, you know. Okay. So, but who's moving to Alaska? So I do, you know, jokingly, it's really, you know, it's like, don't go to DC or don't go to ATL because obviously there's more women than, so I don't know. I don't, you know, I've not been looking and those sorts of things. And so I don't know what the dating situation is out there, but I want to talk.
I saw Dr. Dustin, you wanted to jump in. I saw your hand.
Yeah. If you don't mind.
No.
I do think it's also important to note that, and maybe I'm jumping a little too early on this, but you know, social media is not conducive to, you know, stabilizing families. Right. All that we do as Black people, you know, trying to, whatever effort we can to kind of create the family, it you know, it's really a space of validation, right? It's like a one-on-one. Like, I'm not getting, like, likes with my wife who are sending me, I like this, and giving me the validation, right? Right? But right. It's like others who are doing that. And so that's fostering, that's an attempt to try to foster some sort of relationship with others, but that's not pulling us together as a unit, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that, yes, there's a history of pulling us apart, pulling Black people apart, and this is why we don't have those stable relationships. But it's also overlaid with this sort of broken relationships in a way that's untraditional or not traditional to what would be what we do to survive, you know, white America, if you will.
Well, since you broke into that, we can just keep riding that wave for a second, because you're absolutely right. One of the things that I wrote when one of our talking points for those of you that are joining us is the role of social media in modern dating. And the first thing that I wrote when I thought about that, Dr. Sharon, was my mind is almost, to grab somebody's words, fake news. Like, is this a fake view of relationships? You know, and are we really looking at, you know, because a lot of people, as you said, Dr. Dustin, are on Facebook for the likes, for the affirmation, for the, you know, people run around. And I know that some people, you know, they say, how many friends do you have? I'm like, on Facebook? They're like, yeah. I said, I got like 1,000 maybe, if that. They said, oh, I've got 6,000. I said, you don't even know 6,000 people. How do you have 6,000 friends? You don't even know them. You know what I'm saying? But nonetheless, I think that, as to your point, we're looking at social media. And how do you all feel? Because for me, I think that sometimes it can give a very false or limited view of what a relationship really is. Because to me, I'm not trying to live my relationship out loud on Facebook. Now, that's just David. That's my, but some people put everything on Facebook. They got up this morning. They looking for likes, you know, ate toast and coffee, you know, looking for likes. So I know this is something, I can't wait to hear Dr. Sharon's input, because, you know, she is like not a big, like, she's not a big social media person other than what she's been doing now. And some of that she's gotten into because it is necessity. But I know personal, in her personal space, you know, there is that absence of Facebook, and she lives well without it. So what do you guys think when you think of social media? How do you think that is influencing, or what, how do you think relationships are carried out, or is it influencing thoughts around relationships or anything?
I definitely think that people have unrealistic expectations because of social media. I think that in some regards, they overinflate what they're bringing to the table, for lack of a better word. Mm. And I know how controversial that statement is, bringing, what do you bring to the table? But my mind is a little bit mush right now. I'm a new mom, y'all. I have a 16-month-old, so hey, I'm in trenches. Hey, this is
10 grand.
And thank you. We're going on week 6, so my brain is just not as apt as it was supposed to be. but I think people overinflate their sense of status, if you will. And I think some people underrepresent themselves and underinflate what they have to offer in a relationship, whether it be romantic or whatever. I also think that sometimes people get caught up in the facade of the magic of social media, if you will, and hear more about the image. What does the relationship look like on the outside, rather than what qualities does this person have on the inside? And not only now for the short term, but for long-term relationship building and sustenance.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm curious to hear, Shalay, what you would have to offer with that. But I do, you know, being new to social media and being very guarded about what I do share and not share, I do think that people are, I like your words, they're overinflating actually what they bring to the table. I remember, Mariah's not here, but I remember when she was at my house and saw some boxes, she said, well, you know, I can sell those for you. On because they put these boxes behind you to say you have Gucci or you have, you know, Saint Laurent or whatever, and people will buy them because it's that whole facade and that imagery of that they have things that they really don't. Right. And I'm like, really? I said that's so unfortunate that people. I mean, I've worked really hard to be able to afford Saint Laurent or whatever it is that I buy, right. And so, but I was saying to Irie more recently that. You know, for me, it's the credential. So if I'm going to say that I'm something, I need to also back that I have that. I'm not going to be out there saying that I'm something that I'm not. But I do think that this overinflation, because people of the likes or of we're in Dubai this week and we're going to London, we're going to the UK next week. This whole idea of what the imagery looks like when in fact, people are just trying to make it day to day. And I also feel like that is having this, you know, this unrealistic expectation about what is this high value dude or a high value woman or whatever. Like, what does that mean? You got to have six or seven figures. So I think it also creates that that inflation, if you will, of people bringing things that or saying that they are something that they're not. Shelley, what about you? What do you think in terms of what Dr. Destin and Irie said?
I definitely agree with the unrealistic standards that social media presents, the skits and such of the reels and, you know, the imagery of what these relationship, you know, plays are, if you will, are looking like within their family dynamic. However, I also think it's important to think about the generations in which one comes from when they expose themselves to social media, because of course your generational influence is going to be affected by what you see. And so, you know, if for example, you know, you come from a baby boomer generation, you know, which was start what about 46, 45 or so, you know, and you're now coming into learning and getting used to this social media world, I'm most certain that the new age things are going to contradict your values and beliefs. So you're not going to be as open and willing to think about the new dynamics that have been created within these new age generation marriages within our Black culture. And so for me to be a part of the older millennials, now when we think about the generational spans, they roughly are about 14 to, I'll say, about 18 years, if we, you know, really look up the different generations. Mm. And so, you know, with that being said, although we think like, wow, I am a millennial, I'm going to be quite honest. I don't have anything in common with someone who was born in 1994. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So what I take in social media is important. And I am very careful at the things that I take in, understanding where I am and understanding that, you know, yes, a lot of what I'm seeing is unrealistic.
Absolutely. And so I know Irie has to leave, but I know I just wanted to give her and Shelley will circle back to you, but I just wanted to give her just the opportunity to say a final thing about what she is seeing in the relationship space and what, you know, what she would offer our community, our audience in terms of how do we think about these relationships as we move forward.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me again. I appreciate it. And I love hearing what you all have to say, as always. I want to say that I believe in Black love. I love Black love. I want Black love. I think that the Black community needs healing. And I think when we're talking about romantic relationships, we need accountability for our personal well-being, health, and wellness. I think that's the biggest barrier to these statistics of a lack of marriage and lack of commitment within our culture. We need to heal across generations. We need to heal across genders. We need to be more open-minded about what people bring to the table and their identities. And we need to just be honest about what we need and what we want. So thank y'all again. It's possible. People are loving each other. Black people are loving each other, right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, stats are only what, you know, someone reports. And so you're absolutely right. So thank you so much, Ivory, for the generosity of your time and your profound words. And we'll have you back. So thank you again and have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Thank you. Y'all too.
Thank you.
Take care.
You mind if I add, if you don't mind?
Oh, absolutely.
Just to follow up, and what I was getting at with regard to with social media being this validation game is that given the pre-existing challenges that that Black families or Black individuals have just living in America, it introduces the validation game in trying to deal with the healing, in trying to, you know, create relationships, right? Because if it is that, as the social media with the whole likes and kind of like, you know, build this sort of feel validated, then when you take out social media, when you subtract the validation piece, you now have to work with real relationships, you know, outside of that concept of the validation game. And so does that make you unprepared for a relationship, or do you need to continue the validation piece of working through social media to foster that relationship? And that's what I think is the unfair part, is that now it makes validation, you know, necessary, almost essential, and probably why people don't have long-lasting relationships. And that's just my perspective, but that's what I think when I think of the social media
element. I think to your point, too, it plays into this the nugget of the talking point that was shared with us as Dr. Sharon prepared our information. The one thing that when I looked at that social media piece that stood out to me, Doc, was when I say Doc, I'm talking Dr. Sharon in this case, was that rise in the hookup culture, uh-huh. that instant gratification. Mm. And I think that, you know, that plays along. There's so many things that can tie into that, because who would ever thought, you know, like where we live now, who would ever thought you would pull up to the side of a building, scream in a speaker, pull up to a window, hand them $2, pull up to the next, and they throw out a bag of food to mm-hmm. you. You know, we call it fast food. Everything is fast. You know, we're not putting baked potatoes in the oven no more. We're not hanging our laundry out on the line no more. So we've gotten this. Everything is fast. We want everything fast. You know, we order on Amazon at 3:00. We want it at the door at 4:00. You know what I'm saying? So everything is fast. So now that has played, I think, into our thinking that, you know, we don't, do we put the work in? And one of the things I was thinking about when I was preparing for today, I thought about, you know, and maybe I'm in the euphoria of my relationship because I'm only 3 years in with my wife. We've only been married 3 years. And I'm still enjoying this thing. So maybe it's still the newness, if you will. But I started saying, what's different? Because to be transparent with everyone, I had 28 years previous in a marriage. And after 28 years for that to end, you know, I found myself looking at this one and saying, what am I doing different? Am I willing to do the work? You know, because I remember, and I'm being very, very transparent, y'all. This is a transparent moment. So for those of you that don't know, Dr. Sharon becomes my therapist at times as well. So, and I remember calling her one day and I said, Dr. Sharon, I said, oh my God, cuz, oh my God. Oh my God, she's smothering me. Oh my God, this is that and the other. And she said, no, no, no. And I was like, what? She said, you got to see this different. She said, you're so used to one thing that you don't recognize love. You don't recognize this. You have to unlearn so you can learn. And with that, I realized to that point of that instant gratification, are we willing to do the work? You know, when we look at it, are we willing to do the work, especially when you sit here and give me a statistic that there's 7 women to 1 man? So, you know, I don't have to do the work with you. Okay, right. I'm done with you. Now I'm moving on to the next, even though I got unfinished business, if you will. I'm moving on to the next. So that stuck out to me, that hookup culture, that instant gratification. So when you hear that, what comes to mind? Dr. Dustin, I know you're married. Shelley, I know you let us know that you're not. I know, Doc, we both have been married and so forth. That instant gratification, are we willing to do the work?
Yeah, I want to go back to what Shelley was talking about in terms of the generations in social media. And so she's absolutely right, because when I think about, and sorry, I'm a little raspy in my voice because I just took some medicine that I can't eat or drink for an hour. So you all will have to deal with my raspiness for a few more minutes. And Doc is almost ready, so maybe I can go get a drink in just a few seconds. But I thought about the fact that when I went on social media, excuse me, and when I don't actually participate in some spaces, it's because, one, I am a private person, and I'm a traditional woman. And when I said that one time to someone, they were like, oh, so you are cooking for your man and all. I'm like, yeah, I enjoy that. I mean, it was almost like I was, you know, being chastised because I am still a traditional woman, and that works for me. And I'm not suggesting that it has to be for everyone, but for me, I am one. I was raised by people who, you know, the women who supported their families, if you will, and they still worked outside of the home, but they also supported their families. But it's almost like that is passe. If you talk about it, people look at you sideways like, oh, well, what is he doing? And I'm like, well, it's a shared partnership. But I recognize about my generation and how I was raised. I'm not putting anybody else, do you boo, as they say. But what I'm saying, for me, I enjoy serving. I enjoy being that traditional woman, as long as, too, that there is some reciprocity in the relationship as well. It can't just be one-sided, right? But for me, the way I was reared and, you know, in my age range, you know, in terms of six decades on this planet, I was trained a different way than what we see is going on in this space. And I always say now, well, don't you want somebody bringing something to the table? Don't you all say, well, what are you bringing to the table? How do we do this thing together? How do we grow together? How do we build together? So, Shelley, what are your thoughts about what I'm saying in terms of that traditional woman? And, you know, because you're much younger than I am, but what are people saying in your age range, your cohort?
Dr. Sharon, you're definitely on point. And one of the things you just mentioned is that reciprocity. And if we think about, you know, that instant gratification definition versus, you know, the definition of reciprocity, what most of us are not realizing is the phenomenon of mattering. That's a term that is discussed, you know, in psychology and in mental health. And when I got into that field, it turned on so many light bulbs for me. Being in my early 40s, I just recently turned 42. And immediately I thought, in taking in all of this information, like, oh, I'm not sure if it's just about instant gratification. You know, I think it is most about reciprocity and what does mattering mean from one individual to another. And so if we tie that back in into social media, I truly believe that there are ways social media is being used so one can feel like they matter. And so if in fact we think about, like you say, those, you know, five, six generations that came before us in terms of the foundation of marriage and values. Guess what? This newer age generation is saying, I need the one that I am partnering with to make me feel like I am affirmed, to provide me reciprocity, to give me that validation. And unfortunately, I think that could be a symptom of the lack thereof. Now you have people going to social media trying to gain a larger audience to say, please, someone tell me if I'm crazy or no.
Basically,
you know?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like Dr. Destin said earlier, and as you're kind of just underscoring, it's that whole notion of the likes is around affirmation. I'm being affirmed by these folks that I don't know, but it makes me feel good, right? I mean, I was thinking about the fact I don't have many followers, but I really appreciate the followers that I have. But it's not for me. It's not the numbers of followers that I have, because when I looked at the analytics, I have over 50,000 people who've looked at my channel. They may not necessarily be in my followership because obviously they're not, but there's something that I'm doing that they are interested in. And for me, it was really about to be able to put information out in the universe that's not being put out currently, right? You know, how to shop your closets, how to think about sustainability, and also the things, the social issues that I'm most concerned about. So it's not about affirmation for me, but it's for me to be able to generate thoughts and ideas that are not currently in the space. And so I think, Shalee, what you're saying, though, is that if I'm not being affirmed in some way in a partnered relationship, then I'm looking for these spaces elsewhere. And so social media for some people provide that that way. And people need, you know, we're just humans. We need to be connected in some way. And so for some people, it is their temporary connector, if you will. And so I think that there are pros and cons, but I do want to move us along and to continue this conversation, because I also think social media has played a big role in this. And I'll recall just being introduced to this guy, you know, he's passed on now, but Kevin Samuel. And he would talk about these high value women and high value men. And actually he had men saying, if she wasn't this, I mean, he would make women get on the camera. They say, well, let me see what you look like so I could see if you're high value, low value, whatever. And I just thought it was so destructive to one's well-being just to say to be judged. However, as Doc said, Dr. Brock and Dr. Destin, the options, he was really saying, I have options. Right, and then so if you don't fall within my range of options, I'm going to dismiss you. And so that whole idea of men and women saying, I want that high value man. And so when I talk to men, younger men are like, well, you know, a woman wants this six-figure dude. Everybody wants that same dude, that six or seven-figure dude. And so the guy who's just, you know, and it's not just for me, the guy who's the general service worker or the electrician, they're not getting any play because they want that guy who's in a corporate office that got, you know, the six or seven-figure, got all of the cars and can take you on the travel. So what about the everyday guy? And I'm curious about that because I think everyday guys are amazing. And so, you know, I'm like, where are people falling in line with this? And I was taught, like, you go and you also add value to the relationship. So guess what? Collectively, we have a six or seven figure. I'm just not looking for you to just have the seven figure. What am I bringing to the table? I know that's a very, very different conversation in this context with the younger folks. But what does that mean to you all when people talk about these high value men and women and six figure, seven figure? And if you don't have that, just the regular teacher, the educator that is teaching our children, they will have a difficult time finding a mate. Any reactions?
Yes, I certainly can speak to that. Partly because, you know, going to an all men's college and, you know, wanting to find a partner for life, or really mostly, the women at the all women's college at Spelman who are looking for that man for life. There's this sort of formula that everyone's looking for to have this sort of power couple where, there's like a certain number, a certain vision that people have, and the pressures that people meet, you know, people go, you know, put themselves under to kind of achieve that. I know for me, I must have had an old spirit, because my thinking, and this kind of goes into, Dr. Brock, what you were saying about what does the work look like? So I'll kind of speak to that a little later. But the idea for me, I was more concerned why I wanted to find a relationship while I was in college was because I didn't want to be middle-aged looking for love in the club. It just was it seemed like that was the future for, you know, for me, was that if I did not find someone now, I'd be trying to do this either with colleagues or at a club. I don't know where any other, or at the time it was, I forget, one of these social apps where you connect with each other. But yeah, I didn't want to be doing that. It seemed like so artificial. Now, there is pressure among Black men, especially who want to do well for themselves. For those who do want to, you know, pursue a career where they have a life, a home, there is this ambition that does inform the decisions for who they want. But I also think that, they do have that. I mean, there's that feeling that I felt the same way of just saying, you know what? I could have anybody I wanted because I'm a smart Black man. I'm going to a great school, but I also felt, I think because I had a father in the home, that really had an impact on me about what it means to have a, you know, a stable home or not, how much I needed to have that stability. So being a child of divorce made me want to have that stability. And that's probably why I kind of had it early on. You know, I had that need to kind of get married early on, or at least not early on, but find someone who's going to be a life partner early on. That may be different for people who don't stable, you know, home. Mm-hmm. But it had helped me kind of power through whatever challenges I had with me and my wife.
I think, Dr. Sharon, you raise a very, very a good point that we could get stuck here. You know, trufully, because when I think of high valued, I think the older you get, I'm in bigger years now.
Bigger years. We're at a bigger age.
We're at a bigger age. So I'm at a bigger age than I was before. I think my value system has changed, if you will. And so I say that to say, at one point in my mindset, it was important to have the images, the things that that said, quote unquote, this is success. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, again, I think you had mentioned this in one of your writings or something. I think we talked about it before. When somebody else defines success for you, right, how do you find, you know, so you know, the world defines success. You got to have this particular watch or that car or this income or this way of dressing and so forth and all that. I think what becomes high value for me now is my internal integrity and qualities. Mm-hmm. So if I look at high value in the world system, then I need a certain figure, a certain car, a certain lifestyle. But what makes me high valued now is the fact that I've learned that I don't have to sleep with every woman in order to be a man, that I can be committed to one woman, that I can be committed to being a good father, a good husband, a good son, a good brother to my brothers, a good pastor or a good friend or a good cousin to my cousin, you know, those kind of things. So I think for me, I'm not letting somebody else define my value anymore.
But that's yeah. Maturity.
That's maturity. Right?
That's maturity, you know. And I'm sorry to jump in just real quick. When I think about the work, at least when I've been married for about 20, I've been married for 20 years.
And, congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And not all easy. I mean, there have been moments where I'm thinking about a joke that I heard from a comedian. If you're not thinking about homicide or suicide, you know, all that stuff. You ain't been married long enough. But there's moments you really feel like.
I haven't heard that.
Right. I heard that. If you're not thinking about homicide or suicide, right?
You know, you ain't really been married.
You ain't been married yet. The point
is that you have partners where, you know, you can pull at each other. But, you know, my point is this. What I've learned in my 20 years is that once you get past the distance that grows to make love fonder, right? Because there are obstacles that prevent you from being together. For example, you know each other, you love each other, but work separates you. You live in different homes. You have parents you have to kind of like introduce them to, you know, to a partner too. And all that makes the heart grow fonder. The love, you know, for that person grows. Once you're with that person, all that goes away. And love, or at least that passion, has to be, what I've learned, moved to a different place where no longer are you loving to want to be together. Now that you are together, it's loving the success of the other. You know, that's what I've learned, is that if I, you know, we have, in all the ways that we've been together, I've now known you inside and out. And there's not much more to be much fonder, except to see you win and achieve your goals, and then you see me achieve my goals. And that to me is where the love goes. And I don't know if many people, you know, recognize that or stay in relationships long enough to kind of see where that love ought to be, because you can only love someone so much in terms of if it was attraction, if it was just the emotions. That has to go somewhere. That has to build to something. And if you can start loving someone for who they are because of what they achieve as well, I think is where I think most people need to be. But I think it takes maturity. And I think, unfortunately, it gets in the bigger age to really start to see that. And I think men get there slower than women.
May I add somebody? Something? Absolutely, Shelley. I was going to say, I wanted to hear your voice in this.
So I definitely wrote down some things that I wanted to touch upon. need, I put need down and I put some exclamation points. And Dr. Destin, the reason why I did that was because, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I heard you say young, you recognized your need in terms of where you wanted to be within marriage and relationship as a result of your experience.
That's right.
And if I think about that, because I know the initial point was about high value, Dr. Brock also mentioned, you know, how his values have changed, how when he started off here, you know, in terms of, okay, what is success? How do I dress success up? And where he is at now in terms of maturity, my experience was a complete different experience in terms of, like I said, I'm some generations behind you all. And in my singleness, I thought about what can I do in this season, because I chose to be single and have actually been single for quite some time. And I chose to be single as a preparation to be married. And I want to explain what that is for me. For me, my vision is when God grants me the ability to be a wife, I do not want to have regrets of me. Where could I have gone in my education? What have I sacrificed for the love of my husband, for the raising of my family? I thought immediately, in this singleness, girl, make the best use of it with no excuses.
That's good.
I went to school. I worked on my mental health. I thought about the things that were truly affecting me regarding traumatic experiences and, you know, just lifelong experiences, to say, I need to make sure that, one, I know me when I'm going into a relationship, because I want to be chosen as a wife. And so my thought process is, girl, get your own house in order. That way, no one can tell you who you are, what your isms are, because you already come knowing what they are with a different aspect of why and how you got there. And so as that relates to my, you know, the thought of high value, I'm in a helping profession. Like Dr. Sharon and Dr. Brock say, listen, I'm not getting six figures for sitting down listening to others work through their mental health. I'm working hard for all my coins. So for me, that average guy is my kind of guy, because together, six figures is definitely attainable.
That's
and
right.
As long as it works for us, it works for us.
That's good.
So that internal value, you know, that you all talked about, we have to know what that looks like. And it takes us some time, some ebb and flow, some life changes, some generational, you know, experiences. We have to know what that internal value is, because I'm going to say this, we all would look like a clown if we showed up at a table without a chair or a chair not being present. Especially when you got six of us sitting down, and what you got, two, three standing up, you're going to look like the off-ball if you don't have a seat.
Yeah.
Right.
That's so good. Right. And you know what? I mean, I really am so glad that you're centering this whole mental health and trauma, because we actually had a question, and I think Ivory touched on this, about the whole idea of us healing. And Shelley, I really appreciate what you're doing this season of really finding self. And this is what I've talked about for years for people. You know, often there are groups of people, they leave one relationship to go right into another. They didn't even take a 5-minute break. They're right into the next relationship. And all I have to say, you just carry that baggage right into the next relationship, because you've done no healing. You've done no self-reflection. You've done nothing. And let's see how that's going to work out for you. Not so much. And so the fact of the matter is that you have paused. And you said, I'm going to do some internal work on me so that I am preparing myself so that I can work on my past traumas. I can work on the things that are important to me so that I can show up and be that woman that I know that when God blesses me, he going to say, well, yes, sister, you are the queen for sure. So why is it that people don't do what you're doing? Why is it that folks won't take that time, because I would say to you that that old high value, all the stuff that really is about somebody else's stuff. You're allowing someone else to define you, like Dr. Brock said earlier. And it really is about your own self-esteem. Right. All that stuff is stuff. Because, you know, when you go back and unpack the picture, you know, Kevin wasn't a really good looking dude, was rejected probably a lot of times. So sometimes we advance these theories based off our own hurt instead of saying, how do we become healed? And then we can advance a different conversation and talk about how do we engage in Black love? How do we begin to lift each other up? How do we redefine what that looks like for us outside of the context of what the larger society that never cared about us anyway? So why is it that we continue to allow those things external to us to erode who we are? Don't we understand the power of Black love and the power of relationship? So I said a lot.
Yes, you did. I was sitting here about to grab the offering plate because you done gave a whole sermon. But no, you're saying, Sharon, you're saying stuff that is so real because, well, you know my journey, but for myself, I did, Chalet, to your point, and I appreciate all the wisdom you just dropped about knowing your own and being responsible for you. Yeah, because I realized after being married for 28 years, and I thought I would not marry again. I just figured I would date here and there and just that would be the end sum of my life, just dating or whatever else. But it was in a conversation that I was having that caused me to recognize that I can't blame somebody else. I can't say it was all it takes two to tango. I can't blame somebody else. But then I had to, there was this, and this book is life changing, you all. And it is here. She already knows where I'm going. Doc is laughing already in the studio because she already knows where I'm going. She introduced, Dr. Sharon introduced this book to us. And it's called The Four Pivots, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And it and in the book, I don't know if I really got beyond. I mean, I got beyond, but I came back. I kept coming to this one section of the book.
Chapter one.
Yes, pretty much. I read that book, and in that book, it talks about doing the mirror work, doing the work necessary, looking in the mirror and being honest about what's looking back at you. And I tell people all the time, Michael Jackson, if he never wrote any other song, I believe one of the greatest songs he ever wrote was I'm Struggling with the Man in the Mirror, trying to get him to change his ways. And I think that what has to happen is there needs to be an awakening. When you ask Dr. Sharon why people are not doing it, I think that we talk about the woke culture. I don't think we're woke yet. To realize, you know, because it was that book that we were reading in a leadership capacity that caused me to stop and begin to say, who in the heck is David? What have you allowed other people to define for you? What have you defined for success? Why are you pointing the finger? You know, my mother said one time to me, when you point your finger at somebody, three are pointing back at you. And she named those three fingers. Remember your stuff. She says, so when you're pointing at somebody else, remember three times as much. Remember your stuff. So what are you blaming somebody else for that you're responsible for? What didn't you do? What could you have done? And I got stuck in that mirror. And that thing, that changed my life.
Wow.
By looking in the mirror and being able to say, you're not as well put together as you think you are. You don't have it all going on there. Yeah, in the morning you need a breath mint like everybody else. You know, you know, get the sleep out the corner. You don't wake up. I don't care how many soap operas y'all watch. They don't wake up like that in real life. Waking up, their hair is styled. They got pajamas that didn't get wrinkled. They got makeup on it. That is baloney. That is the foolishness that we see on television, the foolishness that we see on social media. But if you ever, Shelley, and I salute you for that. And Dr. Dustin, what you said about knowing what you need. I didn't know what I needed. I didn't know. I when y'all said about relationships, I started thinking. I was like, okay, Uncle Roy and Aunt Annabelle. Okay, because when I look at Aunt Annie and Uncle Jimmy and Granddad and Grandma,
I don't think outside of those three, I can find any more relationships that were anything I would want to emulate in my growing up, and in my years, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
And Aunt Uncle Roy and Aunt Annabelle, I only saw them at church. I don't know what home was like, but at church they were, you know, matter of fact, I don't even know if they was really together, Sharon, because we talked about them before. One went to one church and one went to the other all their life. So I don't even know if they didn't even go to church together. You know what I'm saying?
Really but together. They,
right. Like, what's really going on here?
But to your point, I think the answer to your question, Dr. McDaniel, and thank you, Shelley, for the points that you've raised, is that there's not enough time. And it goes to Dr. Brock, the idea we're in this culture where it's so fast paced. You know, I was listening to a speaker named Max Stossel, and he talks about how social media impacts the traditional interactions of the real world. And he raised this good point. He says that there's a race to know yourself, and the algorithm will know it faster than you. And you gotta beat the algorithm, because it will inform all your decisions as you engage with technology. And now we're in this race, and that's pressure.
That's pressure,
you know, to figure out your life faster than you can. And it takes a chalet. It takes a person like that who can say, "I'm gonna pull back. I'm gonna be very thoughtful," And I think that's a dime that our society makes us have to think faster than we ourselves are ready for, if that makes sense.
No, I think that that's absolutely right. But I think that what Chalet has centered and what you're saying, Dr. Dustin, is though it's really our decision to make a choice about that the algorithm is not going to determine what I see or who I am or what I'll be, right? And so I often hear, because I'm, you know, and Doc, I'm not an influencer, I'm a content creator. There's a
Thank
difference.
You. I apologize. Wondering.
Wait. So as I'm creating content and I'm hearing other people talk about content, is that once they see Sharon likes X, Y, and Z designer, then everything comes like that designer or some derivative of that, right? But I'm like, no, I'm going to reject that. What I'm going to do is look at something different. So I'm always confusing the algorithm. And I think that that's the thing that we have to do. How do we confuse the algorithm? How does a behavior like Chalet's talking about, like, I'm going to pause. So someone else's society would say, well, Chalet, you're 42. Shouldn't you be? No, I'm going to confuse the algorithm, because at the end of the day, I would have been a part of the statistic of divorce had I not done the work that I needed to do as Absolutely. I prepare myself for my queendom. You know, so that's Absolutely. The whole
Oh, I
period.
Love that word, queendom.
Queendom, okay. right? So, Shelley, why don't you go and what's your thoughts about that?
Yeah. Listen, I try my best to share both, you know, the advantages of the pause. And I actually just wrote down confuse the algorithm, because I'm a transition now into my mental health right. space. Yeah, I love
that. That's some good stuff right there.
Yeah. Listen, absolutely. I know when I'm getting a coin or two for free.
Yes, sir.
So I do what I can. So it's like, you know, with that, like you say, the decision to confuse the algorithm and be intentional, because yes. I see the bigger goal. And oftentimes I have to say, even now out loud, listen, give yourself credit for the small wins. You're getting somewhere.
Yes.
Because it's not always about, you know, well, okay, you didn't reach this goal, but it's like, okay, well, wait a minute. First of all, whose time frame am I really on? And if I really want to make the impact and have the effect that I desire, not you for me, but me for me, girl, you have to put in a pause and shut the door with that, period on the end, and do what's necessary. And so the intentionality, you know, behind the movements of how we are within our relationship dynamics, two things come to mind. And interesting enough, Dr. Destin, they were introduced to me by Sharon and David. And one was the love language and EQ phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And the other, Dr. David would say to me in many aspects, girl, when you accept the fact that you are different, worlds will open up. And combining that language and those experiences that I received within, you know, my work, my profession, I did the work. And when I tell you, slapped around, but the value that came about that has me in a better space.
That's so good.
And so now I am able to show up more informed, more intentional, and as a result, my impact will be greater positively.
That is so good. Yeah. And I think that's powerful. That's powerful. And when you talked about slapped around like you were doing, you're like, girl, you all in your trauma, you up in your trauma, but you working it out. And so that reality, that mirror work, you know, it will have us like, ooh.
Woo!
Woo! You a piece of work right here.
Sit down, make the decision.
Right.
You looking a hot mess. You ain't got beat down.
Right. You know, it will make you put yourself in timeout.
It will. It will.
Listen.
Seriously.
It will.
It really does. And Shelley, thank you for sharing so transparently. I mean, this is, I'm just going to let our readers.
This is part one.
This is part one. Yeah. Because this is yeah. Definitely, we'll keep recording because we're going to end up breaking this into two podcasts probably.
Yeah.
But there's so much here that we have not even scratched the surface. And you guys, every time you guys drop a nugget, Shelley, I'm like you. I write things down, you know, because I get some things and I'll work them in and you'll hear them in a message or a sermon and I ain't giving nobody credit. I'm just going to tell you now.
You say it's just not.
But this is so good and so real. Doc, we know we've been talking for a minute here and this is such a rich subject matter that we realize we can't give it to you all in one podcast. So I think we need to maybe pause right here. Doc, what do you think?
I think so. This has been an extraordinary conversation that'll go on and on and on. We love it. Thank you both.
Right. So you guys just pause. If you are listening, audience, will you do us a favor? Pick up on episode 2. This conversation continues with Dr. Dustin, Shelley Allen, Avery Bennett, Dr. Sharon, and myself. And as we say each week, what's up, cuz?
What's up, cuz?